And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show. Saturday Slam and Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slam and Jam on the Athletic NBA Show.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
All right, we are rolling.
How about we can just watch basketball?
How about we can just watch basketball?
Lucky that wasn't turned over. Anthony Edwards, that time he does finish with the exclamation point.
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Monday morning. We have a lot to catch you up on. From this weekend in the NBA, we had a really thrilling Sunday at the top of the Eastern Conference. So let's get into it. I'm Jared Weiss. I am joined as always on Monday mornings by the one and only Mo DeKeel. What's going on, Mo?
Not a whole lot, man. Just a lot of hoops.
All right, we got a lot to get into here. We got Jade Hoy on the boards for us as always. And before we get into it, coming up on today's show, we had dunks, we had comebacks, we had collapses, we had ejections. And the first thing that we're going to get into is the biggest collapse of them all. The Pelicans beat the Celtics 120 to 115 in overtime in the Sunday afternoon ABC game. And that's surprising because the Celtics were up 24 points halfway through the third quarter, and the Pelicans ended up pulling off their biggest comeback in franchise history in the regular season. Mo, why did that happen?
Well, you know, you got to give a ton of credit to the Pelicans because they just really picked up their defensive intensity. And I think it started with Josh Hart, Jared. When he came in the game, brought a ton of juice with him. Just a ball of energy and was just rolling. And defensively, they were doing a great job trapping and hedging out of the pick and rolls. And behind that, they were doing an even better job rotating. So like even when the Celtics would get out of the trap, they would rotate and take those shots away. Every shot for the Celtics, it felt like, you know, and it apart from a few here and there, just felt like a tough shot, whether it went in or not. In the the last 6 minutes of the third quarter all the way to the end of this game, it just felt like everything was tough for the Celtics. They didn't get any real easy looks.
Yeah, I know if Dave Dufour was hosting this episode, he'd be making Danny Green comparisons on Josh Hart there. But that was some real vintage Danny Green stuff from him. And he was getting to the line, too. He ended up with 10 boards. He ended up 5 for 7. It was 17 points, and it was a plus 18, which I think was by far the highest in this game. I know, tied with Nico Melli, who somehow had a plus 18, even though he shot 1 for 7. But he hit the one that counted, right? That's all that mattered.
What's crazy is Melli was huge in the pick-and-roll defense as well. Like, he was doing a great job hedging and trapping. Like, the Celtics were trying to pick on him defensively, and he was just like, nope, I'm game tonight. And it was really impressive.
Yeah, and that was the big story, was in the second half, at least offensively, the big story was the Pelicans started really blitzing just over everything on Jason Tatum, trying to force a ball out of his hands. He admitted after the game that he felt like he didn't do a good enough job getting the ball out of his hands quickly enough. But while at first the Celtics were able to kind of capitalize on some high-low action because they were playing double big most of this game, eventually it just led to too many turnovers, too many scoreless possessions, and the Pelicans just started kind of running down their throats. And before they knew it, it wasn't like they came back and they just completed the comeback at the buzzer. I mean, the Pelicans took the lead with 4 minutes left in the game. Like, they made this 24-point comeback pretty tidy.
Yeah, no, it was a really fun game to watch. I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, this is just fun basketball. Down the way, you know, the play Zion makes, you know, at the end of regulation to tie it, and then you know, to take the lead. And then Jason Tatum with the floater to tie it. Like, it was just fun basketball all across the board. And, you know, it really, honestly, I can't say enough about the Pelicans because I was impressed. I didn't think they had this in them. We just saw them get blown out by the Suns a few nights ago in the fourth quarter, you know, and I just didn't think the Pelicans were going to be able to fight back and get their way back into this game. Just impressive on all counts for them.
And I mean, we're kind of burying the lead here because while Brandon Ingram had a very good game, really a terrific game, he had 33 points on 11 for 22 shooting, pretty much a perfect game. But the story of this game was Zion Williamson, who the Celtics had a really good game plan of starting with Tristan Thompson on him and then Daniel Tice rotating underneath. And that worked really well in the first half. He went, I think, what, 1 for 5 in the first half. And then in the second half, he went absolutely insane, and he ended up finishing with 28 points in this game. He got to the line 10 times, 10 boards on top of that. But there were just so many plays where he just rose above and dominated. I think the most notable one was when he backed down Tristan Thompson and just completely bulldozed through him and made Tristan Thompson, who's like one of the toughest guys on the block in the entire NBA, look like a guard. It was just unbelievable to see the real explosiveness of Zion Williamson on full display.
Yeah, no, that was the one, right, where they took the lead, and he just honestly, there was nothing Thompson could do because I thought he did a good job defensively, and Zion just said, I'm bigger than it was almost Thanos like, you know. It was he just kind of came in, snapped his finger, and I'm like, I'm gonna run through you. And that's basically what it was. But it's not even just that, you know, he makes that big play, the kick out three to Brandon Ingram to really kind of break open the game for them in overtime. You know, that's a huge play for them. It was just Zion doing a lot, you know, as a ball handler for the Pelicans that really sort of opened things up for them. And you're right, the Celtics did a great job to start the game on him, but, you know, eventually he just found his way to bowl through everybody.
So you're more of a Marvel guy, I'm more of a Pokemon guy. So I tweeted during the game that he's like Blastoise with handles. And
of course, you're a Pokemon guy.
Hey, I gotta catch them all, okay? Although you're not gonna catch Zion because he is completely uncontainable. And this is one of his, I think, most impressive games of a very impressive year so far. I mean, the guy's already a superstar, and he's still barely even scratching the surface. I mean, it's funny watching this game. I'm like, he still isn't really playmaking off the bounce much yet. He still isn't that versatile defender that he had the potential to be when he was younger. He still doesn't even really know how to score from the outside, and it doesn't even matter because he just keeps exploding through triple teams and finishing or really dominating the glass. And a big thing in this game was those 5 offensive rebounds where, you know, he was cleaning up so much stuff out there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough cover. I mean, playing, and he's going to be a tough cover for everybody every night. It looked for a while like the Celtics had a good plan. Sometimes it felt like they were over helping too much. You know, there were plays where, like, you know, Robert Williams would go in too much, or even on that play where Zion kicks it out to Ingram, you know, Jaylen Brown is jumping to is leaving Ingram to go help on this Zion drive. But it looks like Tice is right there and in position to at least, you know, defend it. And you know, him going in to help open that door open. It was just, it felt like everybody on the Celtics was just kind of almost too happy to help on Zion, and by doing that it opened the door for him to make other passes out.
Absolutely. But so on the flip side, offensively for the Celtics, this was another really just disastrous collapse in the second half. They've had this they're like one of the worst fourth quarter offensive teams in the NBA this year, and it just seems to be getting worse and worse. I mean, what are you seeing that's happening for them out there? Do you think there's a solution for them in the near future?
It's hard because, you know, the thing for the Celtics is, you know, they don't get a ton of easy looks. You know, there are a lot of stuff that they got to kind of create on their own. It's been challenging. You know, Kemba Walker isn't fully there yet. I think he went 1 for 12 from three tonight. So, you know, he's been struggling. And, you know, they're missing Marcus Smart to a degree. I just feel like they're not finding ways for easy baskets. And I don't think they're getting a lot of creativity out of their playbook from Brad Stevens. I think he's got to kind of start changing some things up here a little bit and start going to a few more things in the bag to kind of open up the offense a bit more.
Yeah. I'll have some more coverage on that over on The Athletic. So be sure to sign up theathletic.com/dailyding. Another important note is Marcus Smart is going to be out until at least after the All-Star break, according to Woj. Something that we've been kind of hearing, but nobody was really stating it confirmed. But he put that out there before the game. So it's going to be a long, long stumble into the All-Star break for this team. One last thing. You know what? Actually, screw it. Let's save that for later.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's head over to Staples, where the Nets took down the Clippers 112-108. Now, this almost turned into the same thing as the Boston loss, where they were up 15 early in the fourth quarter after a James Harden three, and then they were tied with just 30 seconds left. What the hell happened in this one, Bo?
I think, you know, the Nets kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit. I think the Clippers began finding a footing offensively, and then they were just able to get some stops and force a couple of misses from the Nets and take advantage of it as they were going forward. And, you know, then the last 30 seconds, it just got tough. I mean, it came down to literally the Clippers not being able to come up with an offensive, come up with a defensive rebound. You know, they get Kyrie to jack up a step back 25 footer, and you know, there it looks like you're going to be able to get the stop right off that, and DeAndre Jordan taps it in for the game winner.
And by the way, yikes on that Kyrie shot, because he was taking so many and hitting so many great shots up until that point. It was kind of really carrying the offense at the end, and then just for some reason settled that one. But one of the weird things of this game was Paul George was having a really good fourth quarter, and then he came out with 3 minutes left and wasn't really apparent why.
Well, I think that's just them trying to limit his return from
you think so? Okay.
Coming back. I think it was a minutes restriction thing. I don't think it was anything more than that. Everybody's trying to read. If anybody's trying to read too much into it, they got to stop, because I think it was literally just a minutes restriction thing. I think, you know, he only played 25 in their win against the Jazz on Friday night. They, he played 33, I think, tonight. Was that yes. The final number?
Yeah, 33.
You know, and so, you know, I don't think they wanted him to progress more than that. Obviously, everybody's looking at it going like, oh, you got to just let him play those last 3 minutes. But
no, you don't.
They have a minutes restriction in place literally to protect them from overusing the player. So we don't know what's the science that went into it or what they're using to kind of decide these things, but I think just at the end of the day, I think their sports management team told them, said, hey, got to pull the plug, win or lose. It's a regular season game, so I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Exactly. You got to keep him healthy, and you'll win plenty of games in the future if that's the case. And you know what? Even with the minutes restriction, he was probably the best player in this game for them. He had 34 points on 12 for 19 shooting and 7 dimes, although he did have 6 turnovers. But then at the end, it was Kawhi who just went completely crazy at the end there, really dominating on the glass, was attacking really well, and was was really doing everything he needed to do. But then we get to the final play, and he drives, they run a perfect play to get him downhill on James Harden. He's really blowing through James Harden and goes up for a layup, but he technically dunked it basically. And Harden flops off of him, and you're thinking, oh, well, this is going to be a no call, so it's a Harden flop. And they call an offensive foul. And sure enough, when you watch the replay, he did just barely stick out his arm, which, you know, based on the points of emphasis this year, that is technically an offensive foul. So a really kind of shocking way for this game to end.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to call that, they got to call the forearm before that from James Harden, sure, who's on top, who's riding him. You know, I think honestly, it should have been a no call on both sides. It shouldn't have been a foul on Harden or a offensive foul on Kawhi. I think, you know, Harden did a great job of acting. He's in LA, so apparently he thought he was up for an Academy Award. So he went flying 5 feet, which was a little bit ridiculous. So I think, you know, just a bad play in that situation, a bad call from the refs. I get why Harden did it. I'm not mad at Harden for doing it. But also this kind of goes back to, you know, Ty Lue used his challenge on a offensive foul when Pat Beverly was setting a screen for Jeff Green. And I mean, in real time, I thought that was an offensive foul. I thought that was a bad challenge call to begin with. You wonder if he kind of wishes he could have still had his challenge back to, you know, hit the siren on this one.
Sure. And of course we had the craziest ending of all, which was after the miss at the end there for the Nets and looked like it was probably going to go to overtime, or the Clippers would have one last chance. DeAndre Jordan just sticks a hand out, catching a long rebound, and just smacks it back off the glass and it goes in. And it was just fascinating that DeAndre Jordan, he ended up playing like the last, I think, 15 minutes basically of this game, and ended up closing for them. And, you know, usually Jeff Green's the one closing, but Jeff Green, he took a really tough shot to the ribs, seemed to re-aggravate an injury for him, and ended up, after being down in pain for a while, leaving the game. And he also managed to kick the Gatorade cart 20 feet after on his way out. But, you know, huge victory for DeAndre Jordan, someone who obviously they're paying to be their closing center. And it was great to see him actually be a real important factor in closing out this game.
Yeah, I mean, a big night for him, 13 and 11. And really just for the Nets. I mean, they swept their entire West Coast trip, beating the Suns, beating the Lakers and the Clippers in this whole run, you know, and this is all without Kevin Durant and no Kyrie Irving in their win against the Suns. Like, this was a good run for the Nets. Like, they're on a nice little roll here. This is a big win.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's go around to some of the more exciting...
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Moments and important moments from the rest of the weekend. We had, first off, the dunk heard round the world. Anthony Edwards with the just ultimate posterization on Yuta Watanabe, which looks really similar to what I think is the best game dunk of all time, which is Vince Carter posterizing my non-cousin Frederick Weiss in the Olympics. I mean,
are you sure you're not cousins? Are you sure? Have we done the 23andMe test? Are we sure?
You know what? Thankfully, he spells his name with one S and I do with two S's, so I didn't have to do the test.
Oh, just because somebody in your family had a typo years ago doesn't mean I still think you need to do the test.
But so, regardless of my family's very painful history, I mean, that Anthony Edwards dunk, where would you, I guess, put that in, you know, recent history of some of the great epic posterizations?
I mean, it was one of the best dunks of the year. I don't know if I'm going to go beyond that. I'm not sure if I'm going to remember it beyond this year, but you know, I mean, it was just pretty impressive. He drives baseline and just rises up on Watanabe. And the thing is, the funniest thing is Aaron Baines, of all the guys, kind of sees it happening. And when he makes a business decision, that says a lot. Because Baines is like he's on more posters than I think Tax or Holden posters up. I don't know. I botched any sort of phrase I could have come up with for that one. But the fact of the matter is, if Baines is making a business decision, that says a lot when Edwards is coming down. And he had another big dunk against the Warriors a few weeks ago. So not surprised to see him catching another body.
See, he's on posters more than masking tape and walls. Nah, there's no good way to pull that off.
Yeah, no, there was. We failed. We failed. Sorry to our listeners. We failed you. We couldn't come up with a good one. Sorry.
Right, Jade, edit this out, but don't actually edit this out.
Chance to win it right here. Rozier. Gonna have to put something on.
Let's go to the rest of the stuff that happened this weekend. And before we talk about some ejections, let's first talk about what happened after an ejection. So late in the Warriors-Hornets game, it seemed like the Warriors were in control and the game was about to be theirs. And then suddenly, Draymond Green gets ejected from the game.
I'll tell you, Draymond Green better be careful.
Yeah,
he better be careful. The Hornets got the timeout, and Draymond Green almost got a technical.
Uh-oh.
Did he? Yeah, he did. And he's gone. That means he's got two. Oh, my goodness.
Terry Rozier hits a pair of free throws, and then Terry Rozier gets the ball back and hits an insane fadeaway jumper to win the game. It's been like a real just unbelievable run for Terry Rozier as of late.
Wild. It was a wild game. I mean, even the play before that, Jared, you know, the LaMelo Ball tying up Brad Wanamaker for the jump ball to eventually get the situation where Draymond thinks he has another jump ball with Gordon Hayward, except the Charlotte Hornets called the timeout and Draymond goes ballistic.
Loose and a rebound, Wanamaker. Hornets have to foul.
And now the Hornets have a chance to win the game instead of looking to try to tie it. And I mean, that was just a phenomenal play from Rozier. Did you see Kerr's initial reaction? It looked like he wanted to punt the ball for a second.
I mean, you know, the thing is, like, they gave Hayward the timeout while he was falling to the ground. And, like, you shouldn't be able to get a timeout call if you're falling to the ground with possession. You have to be, like, making a football move, as they say in the NFL. You know, it's like, I didn't think that was fair game. And, you know, I thought Draymond was justified in being incredulous, but probably not to the point that he gets himself ejected from the game.
You can't pick up a technical in that situation. I'm sorry. Like, I get it. And you're furious. And we all know Draymond, who wears his heart on a sleeve and is all emotion at times. But you have to control it in this situation. Because here's the fact of the matter. It was a two-point game. The Warriors were up two at that moment. And, you know, even if they give the ball to the Hornets, even if they let them, you know, draw up a play and things like that, you're in a position to still win this game by coming up with a defensive stop. He loses his cool. The Hornets get two free throws out of it. And now it's a tied game. And it's a whole different scenario now that the Hornets are going to get to go in. And for them, they're just saying, hey, we're going to take the very last shot. And if it goes in, great. If not, overtime. And now, I mean, that hurt the Warriors in that end.
Okay, but we got to get to the craziest ejection of the weekend, and that was in this Pelicans game where
I don't know if craziest is the right word.
Really?
Dumbest.
Dumbest. Sure, there we go. Yeah, that's true. It wasn't as crazy as the Draymond one, but J.J. Redick, he draws a foul, which is like a pretty obvious foul call, and apparently like cursed and said something and was upset in his reaction initially, but he keeps walking kind of past a bunch of players and then whips the ball back with one of those kind of like low English passes to the ref that made the original call while the ref is holding up his hands, kind of giving the hand signals back to the scorer's table. And the ref like wasn't ready for it, so he was kind of startled. And the ball was like whipped in fairly hard, but it wasn't like aggressively hard. It was just like a hard little whip pass. And he got ejected for it.
JJ Redick has just been tossed. Josh Tibbin has seen enough. It looked like Redick tried to throw the ball to him, or at least threw the ball in Tibbin's direction. And Tibbin teed him up, and his night's over. Might have said something.
I would assume he said something.
Didn't put up much of an argument on the way out.
I think Josh interpreted that maybe as showing him up a little bit.
And the ref stood by it after the game, saying that he aggressively threw the ball at the official. And I think there's not a person in the world that didn't seem to think that wasn't ridiculous.
Oh, it was just flat out no. That's all there is to say. It was a stupid, stupid technical. I hope the league rescinds it. And make sure not to fine JJ for that one, because you know we've seen players do a lot worse and not get teed up, and for that to be a technical, like, come on, man, like that was just stupid.
Yeah, and like this is, you know, part of this is about the league kind of really stepping up every single year, really. It's respect for the game rules and about what you're allowed to do to especially an official, but also a referee, as far as expressing your anger. And we saw it really get kind of pushed to its limit when Marvin Bagley got called and he did like a quick little spin where he was upset and then he just walked away. But he wasn't like walking away, like screaming and huffing and puffing. You just kind of walked it off and he got hit with a tech for that. And I just, it's like, you're not even allowed to have a reaction in the heat of a moment now. And it's really ridiculous. But the Reddick one, it was like he was kind of nodding. He threw the ball back and the tech happened. He talks to the other ref right next to him being like, I was just passing him the ball. You could like see him saying, I just passed him the ball. And the ref kind of like, I don't know what the ref said, but he's like, whatever, I'm out of here. Okay, well, it's pretty rare that you get to hear someone have a real first reaction to something. But just now, we have some breaking news here on the pod. Ryan Saunders has been fired by the Minnesota Timberwolves, and according to our Shams Charania, Chris Finch, assistant coach for the Toronto Raptors, has completed the fastest interview process in NBA history, apparently, and is now going to be hired as the permanent, not interim, but permanent head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, Mo, how do you think this bodes for Minnesota getting, you know, kind of bringing in Finch, who I think is one of the most renowned people that hasn't gotten a head coaching job yet?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a well, it just shows you that this was probably in the works for a little bit. And no surprise, you know, Ryan Saunders just hasn't really been getting it done for the Wolves, you know, the over the past two seasons. So, you know, even with all the problems they've had as an organization, just didn't work out. Garrison Rosas, you know, president of the Minnesota Timberwolves, excuse me, I stumbled while saying that, has a relationship with Finch. They work together in Houston. So, you know, he knows him, has a good understanding. Finch is known as an offensive genius and really was credited for some of the stuff that the New Orleans Pelicans were doing a few years ago. And I think this is, it'll be interesting to see what he makes of it. But man, Jared, hiring a coach, a new coach midseason, like that's pretty rare. And so it's going to be an interesting challenge for Finch walking in.
I mean, we were just in our first take of this before we got the Finch news. We were talking about how they always hire an interim. They never have a permanent coach to replace somebody when they make a midseason firing. But of course, this was the rare exception because whenever you say something, the opposite will come true, of course.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, it's very rare we've ever had somebody come in, somebody fresh come in to coach a team. I can't remember the last time that happened. Everybody's always like, oh, they're going to go with an interim coach. Don't they always go with an interim coach?
Pretty much. I mean, every once in a blue moon.
Yeah, I mean, it's just surprising. But, you know, hey, you know, the other thing, too, is Chris Finch has been in the league a long time. He finally gets his shot to be a head coach. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame for Saunders, but I've been waiting to see Finch get this opportunity for a while because he's just such a renowned offensive coach. And to see him take over a team with a lot of incredibly tantalizing pieces, he has a lot of talent to work with. And they don't want to win too much here because, you know, they are trying to tank for Cade Cunningham or whoever ends up being the top guy, whether it's Suggs or Kuminga, I guess, by the time they get there. But pretty sure they're going to be drafting Cade Cunningham to get the number one pick. You add one of those top guys to this team to pair them with Cat, Anthony Edwards, D'Lo, Malik Beasley, the way that he's been scoring this year. I mean, this team can have one of the most exciting youth packages in the entire league pretty soon, and they have somebody that could actually put it all together.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, it's very rare we've ever had somebody come in, somebody fresh come in to coach a team. I can't remember the last time that happened. Everybody's always like, oh, they're going to go with an interim coach. Don't they always go with an interim coach?
Last game we're going over here is another game in the Atlantic Division. The Atlantic Division really held Sunday down, and that was the Toronto Raptors beating the Philadelphia 76ers 110-103. They do it without Kyle Lowry against a Sixers team that had all their guys, right? And for some reason, I mean, Norm Powell had a good game. OG Anunoby had a nice game. But the star of the show was Chris Boucher going off, burying three-pointers over and over and over again as Toronto made a great comeback from what was initially a 13-point deficit in the middle of the third quarter, and they ended up having a 10-point lead basically before this one was up.
Yeah, really interesting because Toronto starts the game small, and against Joel Embiid, you're thinking like, oh, he's going to dominate. And the Sixers went out to start the game really well, and eventually, you know, the Raptors went back and brought in Aaron Baines and Chris Boucher. But the real shocking thing, though, Jared, was it felt like the Sixers could not make a bucket in the fourth quarter. I think they won a stretch of 5 or 6 minutes without a made field goal. They made some free throws along the way, but without a made field goal during that stretch in the fourth quarter. And that's when the Raptors were able to blow that game open.
So Shake Milton hit a three at the 10:34 mark. And then the next field goal after that was, I believe, Tobias Harris's finger roll with a minute left, if I'm not mistaken.
You're not winning a game. You go that long without a made field goal. I mean, I don't care how many free throws you shoot in between there. You're not winning that
game. I mean, there was only like three free throws. It was Simmons hit one, and then Joel hit a couple, and Dwight Howard hit one. I mean, it was like their offense just died.
They couldn't make a shot. I don't know if they somehow, the Raptors, found a way to put a lid on the rim or whatnot, but they just couldn't make a shot. And that's a bad loss for the Sixers.
I mean, credit to Aaron Baines, because he came in when Joel came back in on the fourth, and Joel just kept getting miss after miss. There was a block at the rim. He missed a few mid-rangers. He tried even a floater that didn't go in. I mean, Joel just couldn't really find his rhythm there as they kept trying to really force feed him to get him to kind of climb them back out of this. And then the Raptors were just doing such a great job of, you know, kind of running off of that and converting. And they were able to just kind of push that lead out more and more.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, Aaron Baines is the Embiid stopper, apparently. Like, I don't know what else to say. I mean, they were rolling. And then the Sixers just had no answer for Boucher as a stretch big that was able to kind of really put them in a tough spot with their defensive coverages. And he just knocked down, I mean, 5 of 6 from three, you know, for him it's a big night for them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because they started small. They started with Siakam at the five and Obi at the four. And then they ended up basically going double big for the rest of the game with Baines out there with Boucher. And then they ended up closing with Siakam at the three and Baines and Boucher both out there up until with like, you know, 2 minutes left, basically. So it was really interesting to see how this team tends to ebb and flow between like really small lineups and really big lineups. But at the end of the day, Siakam had a fantastic game. I mean, he missed a couple of the shots in the middle of the fourth quarter, but otherwise he was kind of controlling it for Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an incredible game from Pascal. They also got a big game for Fred VanVleet going 5 of 10 from three. I mean, he's just on fire as well. I mean, Toronto is rolling, and they're beginning to find a good rhythm, Jared. I mean, they've been starting this small lineup here for a little bit. They got big wins against the Bucks. Like, they're beginning to find their groove here a bit.
Well, you know what? We knew they weren't going to stay down for long, even when they were sitting at kind of the bottom of the East standings. Now they are in front of the Celtics. They're in fifth place. They're 16-15. The Celtics are 15-15. So even though they're tied with the Pacers in, so they're basically in fourth place, really. But the Pacers have played a couple games less, so they're ahead of them just in the loss column. So the Raptors went from kind of a mess and are they going to put it together to now they're four games back at the Philadelphia 76ers, and they're for real once again. So that's going to do it for today's show. Don't forget about all of our other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA Show. We have No Dunks. We have House of Strauss and over a dozen team-specific shows. If you're not a member of the Athletic, you're in luck because you can get all of our podcasts ad-free, plus some fantastic writing, if I do say so myself, across all the major sports, all for a super low price. So get your sub today at theathletic.com/dailyding. Mo, let's go.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.